We made this.
And welcome to the We Buy Records Christmas special.
It's Christmas, Paul. If you don't celebrate Christmas, it is still Christmas.
Will you have a little bell soundtrack? Are you going to put
I'll have
in?
A little bell on it.
Oh, brilliant. Ding, 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 ding. That one.
If anyone finds Christmas shit and depressing, I totally understand.
Yeah, well, this is...
Hang in there.
Yeah, I mean, this special episode, it is a bit of a listener takeover, so...
It's a bit of a mixed bag, is what you're trying to say.
If you're listening for the first time... This probably isn't the episode for you because it's going to be very self-indulgent, I imagine.
You know those podcasts where it's just people reading out listener bollocks for the whole 5 hours?
Oh my God, they're terrible. Mm. Yeah, yeah, we're going to be doing
that. It might be a bit like that.
Yeah, a bit like that. Have we got any housekeeping?
There's a little tiny bit. We want to wish everyone a very merry Vinyl Santa if you're taking part.
Christmas Eve, 7 o'clock, Twitter. Where do you think it's going to trend this year? Because it got to 5 last year.
But on the national...
Yes.
That's pretty big, isn't it?
We would have been at number 4.
Who died?
Kevin Spacey had been noncing, I think.
Ah, you got hashtagged, so you're knocked down. That's
got
a
knocked
shame,
down, yeah.
It?
In fact, someone already tweeted which celebrity is going to keep us below the top spots this year.
I'm going to try and make sure that Prince Andrew gets in there above us.
Hey, there he goes.
So there's that.
A little bit of housekeeping, Tim. Your shop has been running now for 5 years. So happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
And congratulations to you and Susan.
Can't believe we opened it in 2014. I really can't.
I can't believe how much money I've spent in there.
It was all in a really good cause.
Yeah, just keeping you in the lifestyle you've become accustomed to.
Exactly. Thank you, Paul.
No,
yeah,
we wouldn't be doing this podcast if you didn't have not opened that shop either.
That's true. And we often talk about the kind of positive impact that the shop has had on our lives.
Hugely.
And pretty much all of our friends around here are in some way, thanks to us having this shop. It's brilliant. And a few of our enemies, about 3 of our enemies... Are because of the shop as well, but it's mostly friends.
Mostly friends. Should we do the news?
Yes.
The official chart company have released the 100 best-selling vinyl albums of the decade.
Ooh.
Ooh. I thought you might say that. I'm going to hand you the list in a second, but just for a bit of fun, can you name... How many do you reckon you can name in the top 10? Go on, have a go.
Adele...
Adele is... No.
Ooh. Ed Sheeran.
Ed Sheeran is, I'm going to say, number 14.
Arctic Monkeys.
The Arctic Monkeys are at number 6.
So there's one.
Talked about it a lot on this podcast.
Have we?
Yeah. This is a crushing disappointment.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Taylor Swift.
No.
Oh, I fucked it.
You've completely... I'm just going to hand you the
all
list,
right. It's not going right. Well, is it? No way.
Yes way. It's all the all repressed okay, legacy
I was gonna, stuff. I was going to guess that was my first guess was going to be what is it number one? And I thought, no, well, it won't be because it's going to be a modern pop act. Number one is Rumours by Fleetwood Mac.
There you
number one.
In at number 2, we have Back to Black by Amy Winehouse.
This is absolutely... Jesus, this is fascinating. Okay, so here's my... Right, well, look, I'm going to quickly run through the acts. So you've mentioned Amy Winehouse, Pink Floyd, Stone Roses, Arctic Monkeys, Oasis, Beatles, Nirvana, Bob Marley.
Yep.
And then getting into the teens, Queen, Beatles, Bowie, Led Zepp. Now, does this mean that records are only being bought by old bastards? Or... Does it mean that young people have broken down all barriers of era?
There's a lot of dad records on there, aren't there?
But that's what we assume.
Well, used to it. This is going to be your stock in 10 years' time.
Well, all the reissues, yeah, it really
this
is,
this is what's
it?
Coming in. This is like a crystal ball into your future, and it's bloody miserable as far as I'm concerned.
The Eagles are in the top 35. The mm-hmm. Eagles. Like Charity Shop Classics, The Eagles. I mean, there's nothing wrong with them, but oh my gosh.
You have to go way down the list before you get to stuff that you might
that you might have thought, like George Ezra or Rag and Bone Man.
NWA, Lana Del Rey, Catfish and the Bottlemen. I've never heard of them.
I decided when I once read their name and I decided never to listen to them.
The Wu-Tang Clan. See, that's what I want to see.
This is just fascinating.
Yeah, I think I looked through and it will come as no surprise to you to know. I think I've got two. One of them is Daft Punk.
I'm surprised you've got that many. So you haven't got Prince, Purple Rain?
No. The other one I've got is Pulp Fiction, the soundtrack, which is really high up. But I see that all the time. You go into HMV, it's always there.
Or Sainsbury's or Tesco's. Yep. Yeah, for $12.99 or something. This is, my God.
I mean, there's nothing massively surprising.
But you know what?
It's just kind of what I'd have expected to see.
Quite a lot of young people in our shop buy either originals or reissues of your Fleetwood Mac, your Winehouse, Pink Floyd, Stone Roses, I mean, Beatles, Bowie. It is young people as well, which is why I wish I could interrogate this list further and find out what age the buyers are.
The demographics of who's buying.
Because I think they might be younger than you think.
You reckon?
Yeah.
I mean, because this stuff isn't, that means nothing to me. I don't buy any of it. So I can't really relate to young or old buying it. But I know a lot of old people do.
Oh, I wish they would. But I'm being tortured by this because I really want to know. And there's no way of knowing.
Well, it gives you an idea what to get into the shop as well. If original pressings of any of those come in, you pretty much nailed on that they're going to be very popular.
Oh, this is all stuff that sells straight away. Like the originals, like, all of it is. I could have told you that anyway. I mean, some of them are things that would be unaffordable, the original of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, though. It's definitely a mixture of things where the reissue is cheaper and where the reissue is more expensive. For example, Clash London Calling. Mm-hmm. Reissue is going to be cheaper than a mint original.
Yeah.
Smith's Queen is Dead, a reissue is going to be cheaper. But the Eagles, Hotel California, the reissue is going to be more expensive than a minty first press of that.
Even rumours, there's going to be a pretty tight between a decent...
Yeah, it's going to be tight, yeah. I reckon the reissue, it's going to be more expensive, a little bit more expensive than a well-priced mint original.
The difference being, as soon as you walk out of the shop with that repress... its value plummets.
Yeah, because it's only a reissue, isn't it?
As soon as you walk out of the shop with that original pressing,
you've just moved
your money into a less liquid form.
That's the way I always see it, Paul, when I buy something.
It's just an added bonus. You get to own it, enjoy it, but you also get to actually almost keep what you spent for it.
Oh, completely. It's funny. At the moment, if you look on Discogs, recent reissues, you look at their value and it'll say, basically always it will say around £15 because people don't want to sell it for less than they've just bought it for.
Mm-hmm.
But that is going to creep down and the originals are going to keep creeping up. In fact, later in the episode, we've got some people who've talked about fortunes that they have spent on vinyl.
Oh, yes.
And whether or not their investment has borne fruit.
When they submitted those, I didn't actually reveal I'd be looking up the current value, so they've got that to look forward to, and I can only apologise to some of you in advance. Well, we've got our first listener list, Tim. I asked the listeners, what was their favourite Christmas album? And when we get to the end, we've got an expert who's actually given us her definitive list of the best Christmas records. But from our listeners' point of view... Jan Sundstrom, Kevin and Bean, How the Something Stole Christmas, with the mind-blowing Kevin and Bean song by Wesley Willis. This was a cassette-only release. Does that count? Absolutely counts.
So most people, I presume, that all of that will have been gibberish.
Yes.
I've heard of Wesley Willis, and he's brilliant.
Okay.
I don't know what any of the rest of that is.
Well, Jan, if you want to write in and let us expand upon that, please do.
Kevin and Bean, what's
I don't know. And what's Kevin how the blank is that a blank? How the blank stole Christmas?
Is it a curse word?
Well, that's why I don't know. We've started with a terrible one. Sorry, Jan.
No, I'm sure it's amazing, but I'm keen to find out more. A JJJ vinyl record shop tweeted just 100%. They've got to go for a Christmas gift for you, which is the fantastic Phil Spector sort of compilation where it's all of his studio, mostly ladies, singing with his crack team of session musicians. It's certainly a perfect Christmas record, possibly the perfect Christmas record.
Now, didn't
record.
You tell me about him? Didn't he murderise someone and feed them cream crackers under a door?
Maybe.
Okay.
He's one of the ones where no one cares, it's fine.
He's not on the bad nonce list, he's on the good nonce list. Okay, so Gareth Bellamy, one I've played the most in the last couple of years is from a Swiss dub group called Dub Spencer and Trance Hill, Christmas in Dub. Just because it's fun, dub's good music to cook to.
Just think of all those dub musicians who've slaved away creating this incredible, adventurous sonic art form. It's good to cook to.
Yes. Damned by faint praise.
Can I slag off most of these? Is that all right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. Because we don't need listeners.
Mike and Alicia, Black Tonight and Silent Movie Girl, they've gone for a classic Christmas favourite and a contemporary Christmas mm-hmm. favourite. The classic is Nat King Cole's Christmas album, which I thoroughly agree with. I think he might actually be my favourite of the male crooners of that era.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something about his voice that I think stands the test of time more than a lot of the others, so that's a good choice. And then modern, She and Him, a very She and Him Christmas. Do you know who She and Him
yes,
is?
Yes, because I've got this and it's one of my favourite albums at Christmas.
What?
Yes. Don't look at me like that.
It's beard music.
It's not beard music. It's a lovely sort of folks. It's lovely.
But there's no synths on it. There's no drum. What the... Paul?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah.
Yeah. What?
I bet every listener was expecting you to be like, no, I've got no idea who that is. That's very funny.
Ah, sorry. CP Palooka123 has tweeted in to say, not an album per se, but Chaz and Dave's Christmas special with Eric Clapton, in brackets, looking wasted, and a horribly dated Jimmy Cricket.
Oh, crumbs.
The Chaz and Dave is knockout, though.
That does sound good. I might put that on a loop on the telly on Christmas Day.
Oh, really?
That's probably quite a good idea. Phil Langham has also suggested that the Phil Spector Christmas album is the only Christmas album that can be listened to fully without cringing once. Apart, he says, from the last track.
Can I just say, I do actually own that.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I have a box of Christmas records.
But I thought that you sling out every time someone goes a bit hashtag.
No,
don't you sling them out? All of your Smiths is gone.
It's still in there from Legacy. And since we did the podcast, it hasn't been out since last Christmas. I don't bloody know who he is or what he'd done.
But Cream Cracker Under the Door, Paul,
cream
it's chilling.
Cream Cracker Under the Door, I know. Scott has gone for 1-2 Snow Volume 2. No, I don't know what that is.
Neither is either. Steve Carr, another vote there for A Christmas Gift for You. I mean, it's going to walk it, isn't it? Surely A Christmas Gift for You.
Yeah.
A.K.A. the Phil Spector Christmas album. That's many, many people's number ones.
Favourite Christmas LP from Tom Berry. He really loves Sufjan Stevens' Songs for Christmas. Although the Tijuana Christmas record that my friend Vinyl Carbuti sent to me is going to run it close.
Yeah, fair enough. Adrian Cool at Coolada. I don't know if this is serious or not.
I think it might be.
Oh, Christ, really?
Yeah.
Christmas by Michael Bublé.
Sorry, Adrian, I shouldn't laugh. Rob Wheeler, he says, too many to mention, but thinking about the ones with broad appeal, I give a special shout out to the Yule Tunes, a standing all indie comp, which might have been CD only. Rob did send in a whole list, but we've just not got time to go through them all. But thank you for writing in, Rob.
And a couple more to round us off. Simon Scott at Mr. March's goes for, and I agree with this, Low Christmas, which is a fantastic little Christmas mini album by the Mormon indie rockers Low. Have you heard of Low?
No.
Saw them in a big church in Brighton, I think last year, and it was snowing when I saw them. And they were absolutely brilliant.
Always been fascinated by Mormons. I've got a friend who was a Mormon, Josh Legere. He's a film director. He did a fascinating... I told you about this. Did you watch it?
I haven't found it yet.
Oh, it's on Vimeo for a couple of quid.
Okay.
It's called... I can't remember what it's called.
It's about video. It's about a bloke who re-edits Hollywood films for the Mormon market.
Yes.
And he was taken to court by the Hollywood system for
Correct.
Saying that he was bootlegging. And he was saying, no, I'm not, because I destroy the original once I've re-edited it for Mormons. But then the plot thickens, I believe.
It does. It takes a very dark turn.
So whatever that's called, you recommend that one, don't you?
Yes.
Excellent. Or he also, Simon Scott also recommends John Prine, A John Prine Christmas, which I haven't heard. So I'm going to check that out because the Low Christmas record is so good that that one must also be good. And finally, Nigel Wallace at mole_9. His pick would have to be None of Them Humbug.
Thanks, Nigel.
But Paul, that's what the plebs think.
Yep. What do the experts say, Tim?
The expert in the form of Vinyl Carbuti yep. on Twitter, who is an expert in Christmas music, I believe.
Correct.
Well, she has written for us her definitive guide to the best 5 Christmas albums. And they go something like this. At number 5, The Ventures Christmas Album. Now, this packs 12 festive standards into under half an hour of glorious surf rock instrumentals, she says. Each one has a snippet of a 60s pop hit melded into it. So, for instance, you get Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer opening with the riff from the Beatles' I Feel Fine. Blue Christmas has the Searchers' When You Walk in the Room applied to it. And one classic meets another on Sleigh Bells, where their own Walk, Don't Run appears throughout. Pretty clever, right?
Mm-hmm.
She says it's not a common sight. She picked up a mono UK copy for a fiver at a car boot sale, but the Discogs median is around a tenner. That's helpful. Straight in at number 4, the Roller Disco Orchestra.
Which I have!
Do you?
Yes.
Non-stop Christmas disco. Well, in fact, Booty knows why you've got it.
Yes.
Because she sent it to
I
you.
Know, she
what
did.
She wonders is, have you listened
yes.
to it? Oh, fair enough.
I love Christmas disco. I've got some terrible Christmas disco albums.
So this is a double album of Cheese from 1979. Now, budget label Christmas records abound at car boot sales and in charity shops. And this, she says, is one of the more bonkers ones. In the main, it's funky, frantic orchestral disco with a lot of sleigh bells. Plus, you get a reggae version of Deck the Halls with Fart Along Moog and a bump and grind We Three Kings. That sounds... Yeah. It's an average, Paul, of £2.75
Bargain.
On Discogs. So you would recommend that as
yeah.
well? In at number 3, Bob Dylan, Christmas in the Heart. Now, in 2009, Bob Dylan, whose religion is... Come on, Paul.
Oh, is he Scientologist? Or
what's the other one?
The Mormons?
The other one.
The Jews?
Yes.
No.
Bob Dylan is relatively famously Jewish.
Right.
So he surprised his fans in 2009 with a Christmas album.
Ah.
So the appeal here is that it delivers for Booty on 2 levels. First is its preposterous comedy value, with Bob gargling and wheezing his way through a bunch of Christmas songs like a drunk hobo gatecrashing a carol concert. But listen deeper and you can hear how sincere he actually is, covering beloved carols and standards from his childhood, and pretty soon that warm Christmas fuzziness rubs off onto the listener, despite the man sounding for the most part like he's trying to bring up a massive furball.
Lovely.
You can get it new for about £23 and it comes with a CD tucked inside. Do you want to know what's at number 2?
Please.
It's William Shatner with Shatner Claus.
Excellent.
Now, this one came out last year, but Booty reckons it could become as much a modern classic as the Dylan record, and for the same reasons. Now, I assume you're familiar with William Shatner's singing style, Paul.
I think so. I'm trying to think if I've heard him sing. Probably in passing.
Well, you've kind of not heard him sing.
Does he just talk?
He just talks.
Yeah,
he's a talker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So famously, he did Rocket Man, and I'm a rocket man, instead of singing. That was
gotcha,
the general
yeah.
gist. So if you like that, imagine that, but applied to a load of Christmas songs.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Oh. Well, it features guest musicians like Todd Rundgren, Ian Anderson, and, Booty notes, other people that Paul hasn't heard of either. But like the Bob Dylan album, once you've heard it a few times, the kind of warm, fuzzy, comforting Christmas feeling takes over from the comedy value. And she really does reckon that it's going to come out onto many people's turntables every December. £25 new on red vinyl from Amazon. You might be able to find it on white or green vinyl if you're in America, but it doesn't seem as easy to find on those variants in the UK. And finally, you know what's at number 1.
I do, because it's the best Christmas record of all time.
It's the Torero Band with Tijuana Christmas.
Yep.
aka, according to Bootsy, the greatest Christmas album ever.
Always play this at Christmas on rotation. It is absolutely amazing.
So she says, if you've ever done any kind of crate digging in the UK over the last 50 or 60 years, you will have seen this parp-tastic record. It's everywhere, and it must have sold millions in the likes of Boots, Woolies, etc. So 12 carols, as you know, Paul, are given the full-on mariachi treatment by a crack team of session musicians in an attempt to cash in on the popularity then of Herb Alpert's brassy Christmas album. But they eclipse it in the process by swinging harder and grooving more groovily. So it was originally released in 1966, issued the following year by the library label KPM, which is weird.
I don't think I've ever seen a copy on KPM.
Well, it was in their 1000 series, and it was called Christmas Party by the Soundstage Brass. The original Music for Pleasure version will set you back, according to Discogs, about 44p. But if you want the, you know, KPM library music, yep, they're pretty damn collectible, so it's going to be at least a fiver. Still not very much, is it?
Do you know it?
No, I actually haven't heard it. I know, I need to fix it. I know.
I've got a spare, funnily enough.
Do you really?
I send one out every single year to
them. Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, I always pick them up for Vinyl Santa.
All right. It's the kind of record that we've probably rejected from record collections 100 times, isn't it?
You are so missing a trick. It is absolutely brilliant.
So, yeah, that's one to look out for, isn't it?
Can we just say a massive thank you to Rebecca at Vinyl Carbuti on Twitter if you want to follow her for that amazing list of Christmas records.
And beautifully written. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you so much.
Is that the last mention of Christmas in the show, Paul?
No, it's a Christmas special, Tim.
Now, Paul, friend of the show, Ian Walker, has been chatting with you, hasn't he?
He did this interview a little while ago before he headed off to start a new life in America.
How's that going? It's all
right,
isn't
I think
it?
It's, well, we not so great when we talked about him on the last episode going to the Salvation Army and having all those records and him not having any money.
Oh, that was him.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
God.
But, yeah.
And there were 10 copies of Prince's The Black Album, if I remember rightly.
No, it wasn't quite that bad. But anyway, Ian dropped in and we had a little chat about the East German record label Amiga. Always been fascinated by it. I know Depeche had a release on it. And,
So official, it's a Pucker label.
Absolutely. But it's more about how you got stuff released because it was a state-run label.
But Depeche Mode were on it.
They were. So were many, many Western artists. But I think there was a lot of politics involved in getting those releases, as you'll find out when we hear from Ian now.
You know, my record hunting is always to find the kind of social stuff, the cultural history stuff, the one-offs, the weird things. So when I moved to Germany, very quickly, it happened at the Olympic Stadium, which, as I said, was one of my favourite flea markets in Germany. I was going through this box and I found this thing called an Amiga sampler. Every year, the Amiga record label would put out a sampler of songs. And the cover was just glorious. It was seven young German women, knee-length boots, miniskirts, big hair, pure high 70s, walking across a concrete mezzanine against tower blocks. It was to showcase the glories of communist life in East Berlin in the 1970s. Each one of these samplers is pure propaganda. It's trying to flog the communist ideal to the West. They started in the 50s, and the 50s Amiga samplers, they have skiffle kids. They have kids with duffel coats carrying double basses and washboards and trad jazz stuff like trumpets. Now, the reason why is, and I know this because this is my family, my in-laws. My in-laws were all communists. They were South London, grammar school educated, Redbrick University communists and members of the Communist Party of Great Britain. And they were all into this skiffle and jazz and folk music. And every year they would go on holiday to East Germany. That was their annual holiday. They'd get a coach and go all the way across, either sometimes to Czechoslovakia, sometimes to Berlin, sometimes to Leipzig. And these records were produced for these people, the people that went on the Aldermaston March. They would see these records, these young kids, and think, oh, look at this. They've got this kind of skiffle. Except this is East Germany, so it's shit. Right, there's no correlation. There is no correlation between what's on the cover and what's on the record. On the record, it's just awful Schlager or a terrible kind of cod versions of Italian kind of, you know, torch songs and stuff like that. Rubbish, absolute rubbish. Everyone that bought it would have got home and would have been disappointed. And that's because Amiga was run by the state. It was a propaganda tool. But the origins of it are much more interesting than that because it was set up by a guy called Ernst Busch. For those that don't know, quick-potted history, communism the Germany almost had a revolution in 1918, which began at the Kiel Canal. Ship workers and sailors revolted, and very close to being like Russia, setting up a communist state. And Ernst Busch was one of those people. He was 16 years old, I think, or 17, an apprentice. From there, he gravitated towards Berlin, and he got very much involved with the cabaret scene, singing left-wing communist songs, and got new Bertolt Brecht very well. And if you want to hear him singing his version of Mack the Knife, Mickey Massa, from the Three Penny Opera, is really famous. One of the greatest songs ever written, a song whose origins goes back to the 18th century and was used in a McDonald's advert. I mean, it's got such a long history, that song, Mack the Knife. And his version is one of the great versions, his and Lotte Lenya's. He went off to fight for the communists during the Spanish Civil War, recorded lots of songs, fled Germany in 1933 when the Nazis took over, was captured in Belgium, was put in Camp Gurs in France, the infamous Camp Gurs, where loads and loads of people ended up in the concentration camps. But he managed to escape and was put in the Mobiat prison, which was pretty much a death sentence. Mobiat prison, which is right by Hauptbahnhof in Berlin, which was bombed. And in the bombing raid, he was seriously injured. And that injury saved his life because he was moved to a hospital and not executed. When the war finished, he managed to still be alive. And his prize of the East German government was that he would be given this record label to set up. And he set it up to sing songs, to catalogue and sing songs of the revolutionary movement in East Germany. That's what it was set up for. And stuff from that period, I think, is quite rare to find. I think it's quite hard to find. But gradually and slowly, the German state took it over and he fell out with them. And it became much more about releasing that propaganda stuff I talked about, but also releasing East German rock and pop music, because that did exist. And there were some big bands. Probably the best known is a band called the Purdeys. There's also a modern soul band. It's all crap. It's rubbish. I don't mean to be rude about it, because there's something very heroic about the stuff that these people, they really did, you know, take risks with their own freedom. It was against the law, you know, at times. The German state would change its mind and ban them. I haven't heard anything that I particularly like. Modern Soul Band had one record which is a lot better than you would expect, and look them up on YouTube. It's a very peculiar thing to see these East German guys doing funk and soul. And perhaps the most famous is a guy called Manfred Krug, who was a big East German film star who sang jazz standards. And he is actually quite collectible, and a big box set of his stuff has just been released, which I think is about 60 euros. It was in one of the German record shops, Orbital. They were trying to get me to buy it. It was 60 euros. You have to buy this. He was such a hero. But anyway, right, so you can buy that stuff. You can pick this stuff up for nothing. I mean, absolutely, like, ein Euro, nothing. Particularly in Leipzig, Dresden, East Berlin, Rostock. You can find it in the West German cities as well. But the really collectible stuff, the stuff that, you know, people listening to this are probably most interested in, is that they were licensed to release Western pop in East Germany. The most collectible stuff is that. So the Beatles, I think there's two Beatles LPs that you can buy, and they go for about 10 euros. You can get them from Discogs for about 10 euros, 15 euros. You find them different prices. But most big bands release stuff, and this is where it gets peculiar and fascinating. So, for example, Atlantic Crossing, the Rod Stewart LP, with a glorious cover of Rod striding across the Atlantic with his platform boots and his flares, and high capitalism of the 70s, coke-fueled, conjured up on that cover. The East German version is black, nothing, just absolute pure. It just says Atlantic Crossing, Rod Stewart, because they weren't going to go for the capitalist dream.
And have you got a copy of that?
Yeah. And it was €1. A brilliant cover. You can buy communist versions of Shakin' Stevens, Bizarrely, Cliff Richard. I mean, just all sorts of tat.
Are any of them quite collectible? What's the ones to look out for?
Manfred Krug is the most collectible. That stuff is, for some reason, he's highly collectible. The Beatles stuff, because it's the Beatles. I think the Hendrix one is about €10. This stuff was mass-produced, and it's poor quality. You know, the reproduction quality isn't great.
I've got one in my hand right now. I've got Depeche Mode's Greatest Hits, which has a different track listing. Way more text on it than you'd ever want to see on a record. It's pretty dull.
Well, the text was amazing, because if you translate it, a lot of them, some of them were just about the band, but some of them were ideological justifications for why this was being released in East Germany. And this is a really complicated bit of social history, because the East German state was increasingly becoming illegitimate, and it needed to legitimise itself in the eyes of the youth. I think it's called the Youth Communist League. I think that's what they were called. they were the people that wanted to produce these records. So there was this constant kind of to-ing and fro-ing between the German state and the youth. But the Youth Communist League, in some ways, were even more ideologically kind of pure. What happened is they released these records with these little ideological essays justifying why Paul McCartney has been released in East Germany.
Well, yeah, we translated the Depeche Mode one before we came on air, and there's a lot of stuff about the band which is just clearly not true.
Yeah, it's not true. sometimes the essays are just nothing, but yeah, they kind of, it's trying to con them. What happened in the end is even more fascinating, because what that communist youth did was say that the way to win over the young people was to put on rock concerts. And so more and more of these records were released. They became more popular, and you can find a lot of them. And then these big concerts were organised, and there was a to and fro between West and East Germany. It's a really famous thing. So Bowie played West Germany, really famous Michael Jackson. Bowie played West Germany, sings about it on his last LP. They turned the speakers around, and the East Germans rioted. The East German government then had Brian Adams play a huge gig, and most famous of all, Bruce Springsteen, which was put on by the communist youth. But the communist youth did it on behalf of the Nicaragua Solidarity, you know, the Sandinista, which annoyed Springsteen, and it was just it almost turned into a riot. And a lot of people say that that was the beginning of the end of communism, that it was these big concerts that showed the German people that they could ignore the rules and do it their own way. You know, that's why I love these records, because obviously rock and pop was huge for us in the West, and a huge part of the 50s and 60s, and it just kind of manifested itself in this strange way in Germany, in East Germany, in the late 80s, where someone like Brian Adams would be, you know, a radical figure. The weirdest one was Depeche Mode played. Inexplicably, of all the early gigs that were played in East Germany, Depeche Mode, of all people, Christ knows how that one happened, because, you know, I
think they were insanely popular in Germany at the time. The kids liked the look. You're right about the social history of these records, though. I mean, I think, who bought that originally? Was that some 16-year-old kid behind the Iron Curtain, you know, running home with that? It's probably saved up. They wouldn't have, you know, they did not have a lot of money to spend on records.
Yeah, they used to, because they used to smuggle the records over the border all the time. They were called Granny Records, because you were allowed to travel from the West to the East if you weren't of a working age, because the East German state didn't want to pay the pensions, so they wanted you to defect. It was a famous thing. So grannies used to cross over into West Berlin and then come back with their bags weighed down with Beatles, Depeche Mode, Echo and the Bunnymen, whatever, in their bag. And that's one of the ways the stuff got in. But the Amiga records themselves, ludicrously easy to find. And when I was traipsing around the fashionable Munich record shops and said, have you got anything on Amiga? They laughed at me. It's like music for pleasure almost. It's like, really? You want that? But I'm fascinated by it, and I've got a feeling that this stuff will become more collectible. I've just got a hunch that there's something, as East Germany becomes a bigger memory.
They do get out of Germany as well, because I was at a flea market in Prague.
Oh, okay.
And lo and behold, loads of Amiga, absolutely loads.
Fantastic.
And it was all terrible.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, some of the stuff is just appalling. But one thing you said, but the covers are amazing.
Absolutely just amazing.
The design level is... Because that's a famous thing that happened, is that the commies in East Germany in 1946, the Russians, the Soviets, they put huge amounts of money into the arts. That's why loads and loads of art... And I don't know much about this, but the classical music, supposedly on... It's a different label, it's not Amiga. It's supposed to be top quality, because if you wanted to be if you were a violinist or an opera singer or a ballet person, you were heavily funded in East Berlin. That's why Brecht lived there. He chose to live there and not West Berlin, because you were heavily supported. And it means that there was a lot of kind of emphasis on design and the look... So the records, they do look great. They look fantastic. But, oh, God, the music's awful, some of it.
Ian, thank you so much.
Brilliant. Thank you, Ian. And I look forward to seeing you soon, buddy.
Paul, we've had a letter.
Oh, I like it when we get readers' letters. As you said on the last episode, it's slightly more exciting than getting a tweet.
A bit more real.
Yes.
So Darren Giddings writes to say, my heart went out to you and all secondhand record shop owners recently when I overheard a conversation in a shop in Salisbury, which I realised at that moment must go on every day in every secondhand record shop in the world. A stocky, short-haired, red-faced man came into the shop, probably in his late 50s, in a leather jacket and faded jeans. He looked at the stock for about 30 seconds, then went up to the sales assistant and asked loudly, do you buy vinyl here? When the reply was in the affirmative, his eyes lit up and he excitedly went into a spiel about how he wanted to sell off his excellent collection, that he'd been a bit of a collector in his day and so had perhaps 100 records, maybe even more. I've got loads of good stuff. A Big Country picture disc, Fleetwood Mac rumours, original pressing. You could feel the air thinning as the sales assistant's heart sank and he realised those were likely to be the highlights of this collection. The thought bubble above my head, full of dreams of running a record shop, just went pop in that moment. How do you break it to them gently?
Oof. I mean, I've seen that happen when I've been in your shops. It must happen all the time.
It does happen all the time. And it's funny that he should say Big Country. It's normally, it's often Elton John. They normally open with, I've got loads of Elton John. And I'm like, yeah, okay, fine, great. And then
Rod Stewart, is that another? Someone pointed out the other day that they've started to see, and I've seen this as well, a lot of Rod Stewart now appearing in charity shops. And I think it's the same as the kind of what I call the Elvis effect. As the fans start to die off, the prices start to come down. Because there's an young people are not buying Elvis records.
No, they're not.
So,
and they're not really buying Rod records either.
Exactly. In that similar vein, as they get their fans get older, the value starts to plummet because nobody, there's no kind of fans coming up behind to buy them.
No, there are still some. So Rod Stewart's early solo stuff was on Vertigo and it's on that fancy black and white swirl label. And that stuff, I don't think that's coming down in value, but probably all of his later stuff. Or maybe it's going up because maybe it hit 50p rock bottom in 1997 and now maybe they've become £5 classics.
Maybe. We'll find out in about 20 years.
Paul, let's talk about colour vinyl.
Oh, go on.
So as one of these dance duff people, historically, your people don't like coloured vinyl, do you?
Yeah, it's never been massively... there were a few in the early days. And I've got a coloured vinyl record that plays Inside Out.
And is that pure gimmick or is that...
Yeah, it's a gimmick, but it's a dance 12. But there are few and far between.
And why do you think that is?
Because there's... I don't know if it's ever been proven, but the word on the street is... The sound quality is terrible.
This is what I've heard. So we've had in, you know, a 2,000 strong dance collection, and there's every likelihood that there will be zero non-black records in there. But
hang on, you had a 2,000 record dance collection in.
Oh, this is before I knew you.
Oh, okay.
These days, as I'm sure people will know, when they're looking in Record Store Day or just HMV or whatever, or their local new record shop, coloured vinyl pressings are as prevalent, if not possibly more prevalent, than black vinyl pressings. And in fact, I've even seen records advertised as being on special black vinyl.
Yeah, very tongue-in-cheek. I've seen that a couple of times now.
But is coloured vinyl an inferior product? Well,
I've got some science, Tim.
According to an article on Discogs a few months ago, coloured vinyl has come a long way and isn't necessarily the crap fest that it might once have been. So here's what they have to say. All vinyl records are made of PVC, which is naturally colourless. To turn this clear material into a solid colour, titanium dioxide and other additives are mixed in. To make the standard black vinyl colour, black carbon is what tends to be added, which strengthens the PVC mix. To make any other colour, dyes are often used instead of black carbon, and these dyes do not strengthen the vinyl in the same way as black carbon, but the difference these days is negligible unless mistakes are made in the production process. So generally, within a few percentage points, they're all as good as each other, but there are a few exceptions. Clear vinyl and picture discs, which are clear vinyl with a printed picture stuck in the middle, are more susceptible to poor playback. So I think that, I can't think what it was, but recently a big song and dance was made about a super crystal clear reissue of a classic album. But that might not be so good because very few additives can be added to the clear vinyl mix to strengthen that plastic mix, because anything added is going to discolour that complete transparency. So actually, in fact, there's even a label that makes a, on the back of every, it's a reissue label, on the back of every record, they have a little spiel saying the natural colour of vinyl records is actually clear. And so we do them completely clear with nothing added, so we're the best. It looks like that might be the opposite to the truth.
I find anything related to either the colour, the weight, this, a lot of it's just marketing.
Well, it's all bollocks. Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, the although it has to be said that in the current climate, the coloured variant always seems to be more sought after, hold its value or increase in value over anything else. Just this week, I got a, I'm not going to say bootleg, because it's a counterfeit version of Depeche Mode's Ultra on yellow vinyl. It's already incredibly sought after, doubled in value what I paid for it. But you can buy a reissue of that, no problem. It doesn't make any sense why this counterfeit coloured vinyl one is more desirable than a real properly mastered version from Sony.
Because it's colour, Paul, it's on colour.
Last month they hit Violator. They released three counterfeit versions.
So wait, who is doing this?
But I think they're coming from China. They purport to be the original German pressing. They've got German labels. These Violators are available in red, white, and blue. They were on like marketplaces like Spock, you can pick them up for like £20.
But you're confident they are definitely counterfeit.
Oh, they're 100% counterfeit. But they're now selling.
So they're worth more than the real thing.
£60 already, which is insane. But you can literally walk down to any high street record shop and buy a copy of Violator, probably, you know, remastered to within an inch of its life on a brand new pressing, but for £18 still, I think.
Isn't it bizarre? Well, here's an example that was on this Discogs article about it. Nirvana's Nevermind was reissued in 2009 on black vinyl, and the median sale price now, because it was quite a good key pressing before the vinyl explosion happened again, so it is a collectible, that reissue. I think it was a bit of a deluxe special issue. It's worth about £45.
Yeah.
At the same time, they also pressed up quite a lot on clear blue vinyl of the exact same pressing, same remastering, same everything, but the material they used was blue and not black. And if you want to buy that variant now, it's going to set you back around £130.
Well, if you want to see how coloured vinyl is doing in certainly in terms of the counterfeit market, I'm going to pass this to you, Tim. This guy has a little shop on a boot sale app. Look at the records he's got. Most of them are on coloured vinyl. They are all counterfeit.
It's so flagrant, isn't it?
It's just incredible that that's not like stamped down or shut down, or you know, there's some kind of recourse for that, because that's costing those. And he's, if you look through his sales history, he's selling thousands of these things.
Oh my God. I mean, that's, he could.
It's incredible, isn't
he
it?
He could probably live off this.
Oh,
then.
Easy.
Wow.
He's making a killing. It's endless. And they're all like key legacy acts that people really
want.
Yeah,
Queen, Beatles, Sex Pistols, Pink Floyd. My gosh.
But that, he's competing against you, Tim, effectively. Not paying any tax. Not paying any business rates, not paying, you know, selling illegal stuff. It's just incredible.
But then, you know, sometimes people do still get their comeuppance for selling bootlegs. There were some people who were doing Northern Soul 7
issues. Yeah, we talked about this on the podcast before. Yeah, they did, yeah.
So he is, I mean, this guy's putting himself at risk.
Yeah.
And it's all in the pursuit of coloured vinyl, Paul.
They are all coloured vinyl as well, yeah, it's bizarre.
You were telling me the other day, the guy from Norman Records.
Yeah, it was,
had
was
something
there
slightly
was, there was an interview in the Guardian, and there was a few retailers who kind of were talking about this. And I think it was a guy, Michael Kasparis from Night School Records, that he was saying if he had the guts to stop selling splattered vinyl, etc., he would, because the whole thing is based on novelty and totally toxic when it comes to sustainability in this fucked industry. I'll often put a record. Yeah, he says I'll often put a record out that's just 500 copies on black vinyl, and I guarantee you, if I did it as 500 clear vinyl, it'd sell way quicker.
Yeah, he's definitely right. If you're buying records, let's say you go into a record shop, and there's the two versions of the new album by Hot Chip. One is on colour vinyl, one is on black vinyl. If you care about, I guess this is the conclusion, right?
Yes.
If you care about the fidelity, the black vinyl pressing is going to be tiny bit better, maybe, because it's a better mix of ingredients for a stronger, more cohesive, bonded material, but a tiny bit. Unfortunately, if you care about resale value in 20 years' time, go for the coloured vinyl version.
Yep. One of the questions I asked the listeners to drop us a line about was, what's the most money you've ever spent on a record? I know we don't like talking about money in this country because it's considered vulgar. However, some people...
Have we said what we think is most either of us has spent?
I think we did. Yeah, I think mine was just over 100 and yours was...
60, I think.
Yeah,
65.
Something like that.
So they're the numbers to beat.
They're not going to be difficult to beat, are they? But some people have very kindly written in with them. There were way too many to read all of these out, but I've picked out a few. But what I've also done is I've looked up the current value. So I can only apologise in advance because I didn't... That wasn't kind of on the agenda when they submitted their answers.
Have many of them washed their face, Paul?
Well, you'll find out, Tim. So, why don't you fire us off?
Well, here we are. Jan Sundström, at Sun Jan, apologies for my pronunciation of your name, tweeted to let us know that he had spent €185 on Alphaville Crazy Show 4CD box set. That sounds like quite a lot for 4 CDs. But he hopes that was a great investment. Was he right?
He was, because it's now worth £250, Tim.
Hey!
Well done, Jan. Gareth Bellamy, he spent £50 on the St Etienne Fox Space Alpha box set.
Lovely.
Difficult to resist a favourite album getting re-released with bells and whistles. How's he done, Tim?
He's washed his face.
Perfect.
He's spent £50. It's worth about £50. Chris S. at Puddles Wellies spent £35 on Alice Coltrane's Journey in Satchidananda in about 1998 when it was absolute hen's teeth. How's he done?
He's done okay, actually, now, because it's now worth about £50.
And it's not all about the money, is it?
No. It's just a bit of fun.
Just a bit of fun, Paul.
Because if people are prepared to tell us how much they've spent, well, I think it's our duty to tell them how much it's worth now.
Quite right.
Phil Langham, he spent £75 on Prince's Gotta Stop Messing About 12-inch.
Jesus Christ. That was the right move.
Oh, why? What was it doing now?
It's doubled, worth about £150.
Brilliant. Well done, Phil.
Scott says he'd spent a very out of character £35.49 off eBay for the Dutch yellow pressing coloured vinyl of... I mean, by the way, I do really like coloured vinyl pressings.
Yeah.
I'm just going to, you know, let's be clear. I do quite like them.
Clear.
And in fact, oh, fuck off. And actually, so do you, because you've bought Hooky Depeche bootlegs just because they're colour.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe there's something in it. He spent £35.49 off eBay for a Dutch yellow pressing of the fantastic Songs in the Key of Life by Stevie.
£25 now. It's not the end of the world.
It's not. And his might have been super mint.
Yeah.
A plus, 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 plus.
I have just picked the Discogs average. So
I think he's probably washed his face.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if you can tell. At the moment, I'm all about the expression that it's something's washed its face, because I really hate
it. You hate that expression.
And I didn't know it until you... I only know it because you said it to me months ago. And I was like, it's done what? I'm sorry. And so now, because of the subject of this segment, I can't help myself. All I can think is, has it washed its face? In case any listeners are confused, what does that actually mean, Paul?
It means it's worth now what you paid for it.
I just suddenly thought some people won't know that. And they'll just be like, what? Why? What? Yeah. So thank you.
Captain Copter, a friend of the show, Steve Gray. Most he spent on a record was £80 for New Model Army's Strange Brotherhood. I still sweat at the thought of paying that much.
I'm not surprised.
However, he only bought it after selling a copy of Gold, Frankincense and Blur, which is a single. He picked it up for £1 and he sold it for £250. And to make even more good news, his New Model Army album has now gone up to over 100.
That's insane, isn't it?
That's a win. And a win. Double win.
Tom Berry says, I've never spent more than £40 on a single record. Very sensible. And even then, only rarely.
Can I just check, Tom? Does your partner listen to this?
£10. He meant to say he's only spent more than £10 on a single
record. No, I'm thinking £40 sounds low for Tom.
Oh. Tom, we trust you. Whatever you put on Twitter, we trust as gospel. He says, I've spent £100+ on box sets, including £120 on the Kickstarter for the Voyager spacecraft golden disc recordings, because they are fucking ace and important. Do you know about this?
Yeah, of course I do, yeah.
He reckons that the original gold record is now 14 billion miles from Earth.
Well, he's done all right, actually, because it's now worth £150 plus.
And it's gonna tick up.
Yeah, that's going to tick up, yeah, for sure. To be fair, when they sent that, I'm not thinking that was the best thing to send. What they need to do is bring it back. Let me let me add a banging donk
on everything.
On everything, and then send it back out. See, they've missed a trick there.
Why didn't they talk to us?
Should have talked to us. Nigel Wallace, £40 for a single album. Louis Maholo's Spirits Rejoice. But he spent £300 on a huge set. The Complete Monk on Riverside.
Wow.
Unopened, 22 LPs from Japan.
Holy crap.
So Louis Maholo has gone up to 60 quid.
Doubled? Oh, no, it hasn't. Sorry, it not yet.
Maths. And that's why it's easy to haggle with you. And the £300 box set has washed its face, Tim. Oh, you wanted to say that, didn't you?
I was hoping I could say
Go
that.
Go on.
Thelonious Monk has washed his face.
Brilliant. There's one last one, Tim.
Oh, you've saved the
no,
best.
No, go on,
till...
you can do this one.
Can I? Thank
yes,
you so much.
These are personal friends of mine.
So, yeah, friends of the show, JJJ Vinyl, spent £850 on a Guns N' Roses Appetite for Destruction box set. And for a single one-off record, they spent £135 on Shirley Collins' Folk Roots, New Roots, which is fantastic. I think with David Graham, could be wrong, but that's a bit of a masterpiece, so well done there. Paul, how have they done?
Well, he's done really well on the Shirley Collins, because that's a couple of hundred quid plus now, mm-hmm. So well done. Not quite so well on the Guns N' Roses. Do you want to have a guess?
So he spent £850.
Yep.
Has it gone down to £800, £750?
Keep going.
749.
Down.
It can't be lower than 500.
299 for a new one. Still available.
Right now, you can buy one.
Yep.
Does he know?
He does now. No, he does know. Because when he tweeted this, I think he kind of already put his hands up as well to say, yeah, I may have dropped a bollock here, lads.
Well done, Joel. It looks like you've lost the most on a record out of any of our listeners.
Congratulations, Joel. Well done, buddy.
Hey!
Yay!
Paul, I don't know if you noticed, it's Christmas.
It is, Tim. Love Christmas.
I've got you a present, Paul.
Ooh!
It's in beautiful red and white kind of stripy wrapping with reindeer cavorting.
You've already outdone me because I have bought you a gift, but I'm a bloke and a rubbish bloke, mm-hmm. haven't wrapped it.
Well, you've wrapped it in a sort of Discogs mailer that says Fragile, signed for, stickers on it.
Yeah,
that'll
exactly.
Do. That's fine. Right. Well, open yours first.
Hang on. What the fuck?
It's a record.
The Yes album. It's got some gentlemen with really long hair.
Do you know who they are?
No. It's like a green filter, and I think there's like a... Is that like a tailor's dummy or a plastic head?
Something like that. It's a prog classic, Paul.
Oh, look at this track listing. I've seen All Good People, Your Move.
You're going to love it. I'm going to open your mind to prog. Have a look at the inner sleeve. It's actually got quite a nice design in it as well.
So I've opened this beautiful
look at that
gate fold. I think there's a gentleman in it. Is that a brassiere?
Look at the long hairs, Paul.
Oh my giddy aunt. You think I'm going to enjoy this?
Yeah,
it does say a keyboardist's name on the
You're going to fucking love
on
it.
Oh, you fucking bastard. That isn't you git.
What is it, Paul? What is it?
Fucker. That is...
Oh, has it got the wrong record inside?
Yes, you've just rickrolled me, basically, haven't you? That is People Are People, also known as Catching Up Depeche Mode. Is that a promo sticker?
It's the Japanese pressing mint promo, complete with obi strip of that Depeche Mode compilation.
That's like... this would be a lot of money, Tim.
Yeah, if we had that in... I won't be vulgar, but if we had that for sale in the shop, it would be quite expensive.
Oh, mate!
Happy Christmas!
Oh, hey. Thank you.
And
oh, you absolutely... Honestly, I was...
What you've got me is as good as that?
Oh, yes.
By the way, throw away the yes sleeve. Just chuck it right in the bin.
Git. Oh, I can't believe that.
Here we go. What have you got me? Ooh. Oh, different. I've got a 7-inch and two LPs. 7-inch Cuisine by Jos Henry. The cover is bizarre. It's brown with a kind of inverted... Wow. It's a kind of crude drawing of a man's face, but it's white where it should be black and brown where it should be white.
It's quite old, I think. It's Mauritian folk pop.
Oh, it is. Folklore de l'Île Maurice.
Yeah.
Hey, that's...
We were talking about countries with weird countries with pressing plants.
The label is wicked. It's on AIT Records. Manufactured. So manufactured in EA for AIT Records of Kenya.
Oh, wow. I thought it was from Mauritius, but there you go. It's Kenyan then.
Where's EA? East Africa? Oh, that's brilliant, Paul.
Good,
isn't
it?
Thank you. Yeah, I love it.
And you like folk and you like pop.
I do. And I like Africa.
There you go. Perfect.
Then we've got...
Well...
Hey, Death Waltz.
Yes.
Oh, Paul, thank you. Death Waltz Recording Company presents Big Bad Wolves, strictly one-off pressing.
Yep.
For Record Store Day 2015 on pink vinyl.
Have a look at the vinyl, because you're going to love this. I know you're a big fan of coloured vinyl.
Oh.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Look at the colour.
Oh, it's gorgeous. So it's a kind of pale pink with more like vivid pink splatter.
It's almost getting into those old Mute ones, isn't it? It's not quite,
yeah, but
it's not far off.
It's gorgeous.
Yep.
Wow, thank you.
So you would think limited edition, Record Store Day,
yeah,
coloured vinyl.
Yeah.
Yep.
Going to be like 20, 25 quid now, isn't
not
it?
Not worth anything.
Oh.
I don't know why. It literally has no value. You could go onto Discogs and you'll see like you can't even give them away. I don't know why or how, but we've now literally undone everything we said earlier about coloured vinyl.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
But it does. It still looks pretty.
Oh, it looks pretty.
Thing. And maybe when we're all, you know, in 100 years' time,
yes,
it could be worth 7 or 8 quid.
It's a really good film, by the way.
But how's the soundtrack?
Can't remember. I don't know why I bought it.
Oh, hey, there's one more.
Oh, yes.
That's a cool cover. Colette reads Colette in French.
Yes.
Now, I can't speak French, Paul.
Well, are you a big fan of poetry, Tim?
No.
Excellent. So it's an album of poetry in a language you can't understand.
Oh, thank you, Paul. The thing is, the cover is well nice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If people are playing on at home...
I thought it would be a good gift because you got quite excited by the thought of that chap playing his flute. And I thought this was in a very similar kind of area.
Well, this is exactly the kind of thing that if I'm DJing, I occasionally DJ quite weird DJ nights.
There you go.
And I can play a bit of Radiophonic Workshop and this at the same time.
Yeah, mix in some French poetry.
And it will sound fantastic.
There
you go. People playing along at home, the code is TC1020. So TC1020, Colette reading Colette. And it's on Cademon Records, CAEDMON. The cover is really nice. I invite listeners to have a look for that because it's quite stunning. It's Colette's face, but made up of lots of torn up, cut out bits of poetry. And it's actually really beautiful. Thank you for that.
Well, you got one good record.
Which was the good one?
That one.
Oh, the single.
Yeah.
All right.
That's probably worth more than both of those put together.
Thanks, Paul.
You're welcome, Tim.
I'll be taking back my Depeche Mode Japanese pressing.
You can get bent.
But it's not just Christmas for us, is it? It's Christmas for the listeners as well.
It is, Tim.
And friend of the show, James Yule, has donned his Santa hat.
Yes, he has. And he has very kindly given us not one, not two, but three vinyl copies of his brilliant album from 2017, A Change in State. It's one of my favourite albums. It's probably the favourite album of that year.
Wow.
And our listeners can win a copy.
How do they do that?
Well, you could just drop us an email to
webuyrecordspod@gmail.com.
With the subject, James Yule. That's it. That's all you need to do.
Do they have to email us?
No, they can just retweet the pictures I'll post on Twitter as well. Just follow us and retweet. We're three, so there'll be three winners. Three lucky winners. And massive thank you to James. I know he emailed me to say he'd listened to the show recently and now had been working his way through all the back episodes and was loving it. So thank you, James.
Well, even I hope he won't mind me saying, he's currently, as often happens, people go through phases. He's currently fallen a little bit out of love with vinyl.
Yes.
But our show is so brilliant that he's been loving it anyway.
Yeah.
That's nice, isn't it?
It is very nice. It was lovely. Thank you so much
and
for your email,
James.
James,
come back to vinyl. Come on.
So last up on our listener questions, and again, we've had way too many to read them all out, but we have picked some out for Record Shop of the Year. Now, by the time this comes out, I will have posted my own top 10. Each year, ooh, I do a top 10 of the record shops that I visited in the last year. We photograph them all, a little kind of premise and overview of them. So if you look out for that on Twitter, my handle is @pafster.
And We By Records Pod will be retweeting that.
Yes,
as well.
Of course.
So yeah, let's go. JJJ Vinyl picks. Chico's in Beirut.
Yeah, I've read about this shop. It's on that the Vinyl Factory's top 50 places to...
Is it really?
Yeah. It's legendary. I'd love to go there. And he actually tweeted me quite recently to say he's going back soon.
Hmm. So I wonder if Beirut is also just a nice place to visit now.
Probably, yeah. Gareth Bellamy, his record shop of the year, is the guy with the stall on Burke Hampstead Market. Has a lot of 70s and 80s classics for between £3 and £7 a pop. That's what we like to see.
Sounds spot on.
Yep. And he doesn't have his record boxes out every week, but if he's there, I never come home empty-handed. Less enamoured with that.
Yeah, I thought you might not be.
Because you know my pet hate.
Yep.
Open on bloody time and open most days and, you know, make it publicly available, your opening hours.
Yeah. And if they are available, you stick to what you've put.
Yes.
Seems to be particularly in Europe, I find, that when you come back and do one of your European city reports, the first thing you'll say is, wasn't open, open late, wasn't open, couldn't find it.
It's not difficult for a business, is it? I mean, it's not...
It shouldn't be.
This is like difficult. The most 101 for any business. Oh, little addendum. You know the second-hand record shop in Bexhill?
Yes.
You know the busiest trading part of the year for you, which you're a record shop selling second-hand records. Would you say sort of the 17th of December onwards would be particularly busy? Yeah, that's the sign up telling us he's gone on holiday from the 17th of December onwards and he's not coming back till January. That is bonkers.
That's really mad. Is he cutting off? Yeah, he's missing the last Saturday of the year before Christmas.
Yep.
I'm sure he's got a very good reason. moving on, Mike, Black Tonight, and Alicia, Silent Movie Girl, say, we only have one in West Seattle, and it's Easy Street Records. It's been a mainstay in the Seattle area. But I'm surprised, how can they only have one? Oh, in West Seattle.
Okay.
Because surely Seattle has got loads of record shops, aren't there hipsters in Seattle?
Yeah, I was told Seattle's amazing for record shops.
Yeah, well, not West Seattle, unless you want to go to Easy Street Records. It's been a mainstay in the area for a while. And they say, we've probably seen them post that they have a cafe on top of the music. They love stopping in before the 60-minute commute to get breakfast, which costs less than Starbucks, and to shop a little while waiting for traffic to die down.
Yeah, I think it'd be dangerous. It does sound good, but equally dangerous if I could go record shopping before going to work. Wow. CP, Palooka 123, another market store here, and this time it's in Newcastle under Lyme. It's a Tuesday only, dead nice owner, huge range, reasonably priced, haggleable. Also, a real local gig section, find of the year. Bought over £500 worth off him this year.
What?
That's brilliant.
And it's only open one day a week?
Yeah.
Right. City Report trip to Newcastle under Lyme, Paul.
On a Tuesday.
We have to go on a Tuesday. Good Lord. Scott recommends Discolecao. Is that...
I'm going to go. That sounds good enough to me.
In Lisbon.
Yeah.
And he says, faultless, amazing and wonderful tourist digging visit. High praise.
Yeah.
Right. Lisbon.
I've been record shopping in Portugal, but I didn't go to Lisbon. Steve Carr has picked a favourite of mine. Lee Records in Essex. He says, I found so many good things there this year. I've been there twice.
Why is it good? What's the...
Just a really old school secondhand shop. Loads of crates, loads of bargains. I mean, I've, you know, come out of there both times with a couple of bags full of stuff.
Brilliant.
Yeah, really good. Lovely bloke as well.
Only downside, it's in Essex.
Yes.
What have I got again? I've done this before on the pod.
Yeah.
What have I got against Essex, Paul?
The last time, twice we've mentioned it, I think you pulled a funny face. I'm going to have to do the next one because Tom Berry has gone for your shop.
If
I hadn't have visited, I never would have met you both, and now I would be considerably less poor.
Oh, yeah.
He did spend quite a lot of money. I was there that day.
So thanks, Tom, and sorry, Tom.
Yes.
But obviously he's never spent more than £40 on a single record.
No.
That would be madness.
Correct.
Adrian Cool says, Wynal, South Street, Manningtree. Wynal?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound right. Well, they sell records and wine.
I, that's going to be a feature next year in one of the episodes.
Mashup shops.
Yes.
Because
I've seen a few, one of them completely bonkers.
If I was presented with a shop that sells records and something else,
yep,
I'm afraid my gut instinct would be probably doing an inferior job of both.
Yes.
That's harsh, and I'm sure I very often would be proven wrong, and it sounds like if this is his shop of the year, I'm definitely proven wrong by Wynal, South Street, Manningtree.
Yeah, I'd much rather they do one thing particularly well than two things badly.
But it looks like, to be someone's top pick of the year, they must be doing something right. So well done, guys. That's good. It is hard to juggle two different businesses in the same premises and do both well.
And we'll finish with this. Simon Scott, Spillers Records in Cardiff. Been there.
Classic
great
shop.
Yeah, brilliant customer service, second to none. And they have great taste. So, Tim, we asked the listeners, lastly, if they had any questions for us. They could be record-related or something frivolous. And Jan Sundström wants to know, shipping costs are going up. Discuss.
Yes. Well, it makes the argument for going to real record shops, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but dealing with the shipping costs...
All right, but you see what I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's no shipping cost in a record, unless you go to that one that you went to that was selling Paul Young albums for $17.50, but it included international shipping
inside a shop where you're handing over money at the till with the item in your hand. Genius. It is, and it's affecting some countries more than others.
Yes.
So, for example, the United States, one record to the UK,
$24.
Yeah. Italy, for some reason, their postal prices have shot up. And you can see on Discogs, when there's lots of copies of an item available, you'll see two countries with the cheapest items in Europe. One
Greece.
Is Greece, is because their economy collapsed. And Italy, because their postage is so high, they've had to lower the price of the item to compete. But yeah, I mean, there's just, you can use...
Buying in bulk?
Well, yeah, the trick is to buy multiple items, which is what I do and try and encourage people to do, but you know, and use the like parcel to go and services like that if you're sending a few bits.
It's always worth looking at least.
Yeah, you just print the label out and drop it off at the newsagents around the corner. But you can, you know, you can save £3, £4, £5, £6.
And if you do it often...
Yeah, exactly. It soon adds up.
It does. And then you'll wash your face.
Oh, God.
Gareth Bellamy asks, are there any records that you own but won't play in order to keep the value up?
Well, yes and no. Does that make sense? Not really. So,
it doesn't make sense.
If an item...
It's either yes or it's no.
If an item gets up to, you know, a standard album gets up towards a couple hundred quid, I'll take it out of what I call general use and only play it on a special occasions and be hyper aware not to scratch it and be really careful.
Whereas like birthdays, bar mitzvahs.
No, but because I've got thousands of 12-inch singles at home, I'm not going to lie, I can be pretty loose with how they get treated.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Yeah, There'll be a different way of taking it out, taking the record out, putting it on, putting the needle on, than a 12-inch single where I'd literally almost flick the needle on, you know, you can see your face. But it's just
and then
the
hurl it across the room when you're finished.
Exactly.
With it.
Wash it in the sink with an old J cloth, all that kind of stuff.
My technique tends to be, if I discover a record I've got is worth 100 quid, and there's a reissue that's £16.99, because I worry that I will scratch it or that I'll, you know, or damage the sleeve or something, and I just don't want that stress. As long as the other pressing sounds good, I will flog the rare one, get it out of my life, and then happily play a cheaper copy, which is probably unlike a lot of people, but I just don't need that stress, Paul.
Well, I do both. I keep the original.
No, that's not.
Then buy the reissue to play.
No, that is not doing both, because all you've done is spent more money.
Yes.
I can see how you think it's both, but you are kidding yourself.
Okay. CP, Palooka123, he wants to know what 2020 is going to bring for We Buy Records.
Ooh.
Well,
what is it? What?
Well, we're going to have hopefully more guest interviews.
Yes.
We're going to have some more city reports.
Yes. We're going to try and do some joint city reports where you and I are going to hold hands and go off somewhere together.
I know we've got Bristol in mind.
I've got
upcoming trips to Los Angeles, San Diego, Tijuana, and Athens.
Fantastic.
So lots to get my teeth
into there.
I've
got nothing booked in.
Yeah, but it's because it's my birthday next month, Tim.
Fine, all right. But we are going to hold hands. That
we
bit,
are.
That
we're
going to.
We're going. Yeah. And what I was thinking, maybe if we do a joint little trip out somewhere, if the listeners want to join us, we'll let them know.
In advance.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I don't want to meet the listeners.
Yeah, of course you do. They might buy you a pint.
Oh.
Ah.
Depends who's driving. Phil Langham
yep.
asks, do you store your records or CDs alphabetically or by genre?
Right, well, this
it's has a can come of worms.
Up, it's come up before, and we keep putting it, much like we put off the charity shop discussion.
It's going to be a segment, isn't
indexing it? Is definitely going to be, if not
what,
half,
a whole show.
It's going to be...
No, it can't be a whole show.
A podcast I know, I think I've mentioned, may have mentioned to this before, who deal with films, and they all have these huge libraries of DVDs and Blu-rays, mm-hmm. and they took, I think it was either two or three episodes just to work out what goes where.
Yeah, but they're mentally ill, Paul. It doesn't apply to us.
No, but we will deal with that. I've already had...
Let's just say we will talk about it in too much detail, right?
Yes, that's okay. Absolutely fair, yes. Scott wants to know the oldest record you own and like. Well,
that's a good question.
I don't think I have really anything that I would call by a particular artist or anything pre-78.
I thought you were going to say pre-89.
79, I think, probably that I can think of is the first record I own. There may be something from 78. But before that, for me, it would be a soundtrack. And I think it must be, I've got an original mono pressing of Dr. No.
Oh, it's about 62 or something.
Go.
That's pretty early.
Yeah.
Mine possibly, if you're thinking original pressings and not including maybe jazz, because there's some scratch old jazz that I like, probably Julie London, the album Julie Is Her Name from the mid 50s, I think, which is just Julie and her great voice against just a guitar and a bass. No sappy, smaltzy orchestra getting in the way. It's beautiful, absolutely fantastic. And I've got the first British pressing of that, and I play that often. Steve Carr has a very good question. How many is too many records, Paul?
Well, I think I've probably got too many. I think I've got about 6,000 records. On Discogs, I've indexed everything. So I've included CDs and 7-inches and cassettes. I've got 7,500 items.
Yeah, that sounds like it might be too many. When you can't find your cat, that's probably too many records.
I can't find... Well, because my indexing isn't really much of an indexing.
Oh.
So, for example, there's a mute record section which has...
That's going to be big.
A couple of thousand items, I think. And none of those are in order, apart from Depeche.
Wow.
So I can never find anything. Most of my 12-inches aren't in any order, so there's a set...
That can't be right.
What?
Most of your 12-inches aren't in any order.
No. The dance stuff.
But you have literally thousands of them.
Yes. Some of them are grouped by... So
this is going to be a whole episode, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'll explain in more detail in that episode exactly how my stuff is indexed. And you've got stuff by type, genre, label, alphabetical,
style. So you
style.
Have got systems.
Yes,
in place.
But I've got about 6 different systems for one collection.
Yikes. I would say... We keep our collection quite pared down, and we always try and if we come home with bags of records, we'll then try and go through and find stuff that we can live without. So it never kind of grows to be a great, you know, taking over the house kind of thing. I mean, the thing is, going through stock for the shop already takes over the house. So if we also had our own massive collection on top of that, I don't think we would cope.
I'm going to say 3,000 to 4,000 is more than enough.
That's the sweet spot.
Yeah.
So if anyone's got more than that, feel free to sell them to my shop. That's absolutely fine.
Tom Berry, he wants to know when we're going to go back on the radio and play music. People who don't know, we did Radio Free Matlock. You can Google it with We Buy Records Pod, and you'll find the 2 hours of music that we did. I think this is in reference to the fact that after the show, Tom...
What we chose was so good.
Yep. Well, even I bought 2 of your picks, because week I bought the Norwegian fella. And then day before yesterday, I bought a copy of BGM by Yellow Magic Orchestra.
Fantastic
because
album.
Purely to get that track, Q.
Brilliant, brilliant track. And you got it for 6 or 7
quid? Yeah,
Very good deal.
Really good condition as well.
Well done on that. So that's the answer is hopefully more next year.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. The answer to Tom's question is...
sorry, Tom.
I think we will be doing an episode of Charity Shop Classics for All FM in Manchester.
Looking forward to that.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to that. And I think we may well be getting an invitation back at some point next year to do another show.
They'll have us back.
I think so. Yeah, I think we did really well. I think our listeners treated it as an extra podcast episode, so there were quite a lot of
Well, and if you Google,
things.
You can find it on SoundCloud.
SoundCloud or Mixcloud.
if you Google Radio Free Matlock, We Buy Records,
yeah,
you should find it, right?
Yeah.
Thanks for your question, Tom. My goal is to try and pick more records that I think Tom might buy, because I want to beat the record of about four.
Well, this time, can I just say, because I picked records that related to the podcast, which was the brief, and
oh,
you
I don't
didn't...
think I did that.
No, you didn't at all.
Just picked some fun stuff.
I know,
that I thought...
you did. Oh. And we end on
probably the most important question.
Yes.
Adrian Cool asks, why do I save black and red fruit pastels till last, but don't like the special red and black only bags?
I think that's because it's an early sign of someone being a serial killer.
Christmas quiz.
You've got a quiz for me, Paul.
I do.
Is it Christmas themed?
No. Yes.
Oh my God. Right, good, yeah.
So what I've done here, Tim, is I've gone back through Christmas number ones.
Right.
The last 25 years of Christmas number ones.
Oh, so quite recent.
Yeah. It's all about vinyl, Tim.
Ooh.
So in the last 25 years,
yes,
I've picked out the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 records that you could get on vinyl.
Okay.
So singles, Christmas number ones.
Yes, that are available on vinyl.
That are available on vinyl. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to give you the current value of them, and you just need to tell me if the following vinyl record is worth more or less than the previous one.
It's a more or less game.
It is, okay. Higher or lower.
Here we go.
So back all the way back to 1994.
Yes.
Do you remember what was number one then?
Give me a clue, because I should do.
Jacket Potato.
Yeah, I've got no idea.
Stay Another Day by E17.
Why is that Jacket Potato?
You don't know the Jacket Potato story. So I've brought the little story up for you here. Pop star Brian Harvey has claimed gorging on Jacket Potatoes prompted a car accident that left him fighting for his life.
Not,
you missed that story.
Not cocaine.
No.
It was Jacket Potatoes.
Jacket Potatoes. Anyway.
I'm afraid that is new to me, but it's a good, okay, it's a good story.
So we're back in 1994.
That's worth very little.
Stay Another Day by E17. There's a 7-inch...
It's a banger, by the way. Don't get me wrong.
There's a 7-inch picture disc of it, and it's worth, I'm going to tell you, £3.
Okay, yeah. Fine.
Okay. Forward to 1995. Do you know who was number one?
Spice Girls?
Nope. It was Earth Song by Michael Jackson.
Was it?
Is available on 12-inch. Is that worth more or less?
Loads more.
It is worth more, £9 for Michael Jackson's Earth Song on 12-inch. In 1996, Christmas number one?
Pass.
It was the Spice Girls with Two Become One, which is available as a 12-inch promo. Now, is that worth more or less than Michael Jackson?
More.
No, it's a fiver.
Oh.
On to 1997. Any idea who's Christmas number one?
Nope.
It was the Spice Girls with Too Much.
So I guess Spice Girls for the first one.
Yeah, okay. Got it wrong.
Can you guess what I'm going to guess for each one from now on?
Yes. So there was a vinyl release, but it was a 7-inch and it was only for jukeboxes. So is that worth more or less than the 12-inch promo from the year before?
Definitely more.
No, it's less. It's worth £4. On to 1998 and the Christmas number one. Do you want to have a guess?
E17.
No, it was the Spice Girls with Good.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was. With Goodbye. Again, it was only available as a 7-inch jukebox. Is that now worth more or less than the £4 for their 1997 7-inch?
It has to be worth more.
It is worth more. It's worth £8.
Still not huge money, is it?
No. We now have to fast forward. There was a gap. No vinyl releases. Next up, 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Sound of the Underground by Girls Aloud. There's a 12-inch promo-only version. Is that worth more or less
than
the Spice Girls?
And what was the Spice
£8.
Girls? It's fiendish, this.
Because you've got nearly all of them wrong.
I think have I got two right? I think that's worth more.
It is worth more. It's worth £34.
Hey. Is it?
Yeah. I've never seen one of you.
No.
No, there you go. That's why. On to 2003. Do you know what was number one then? This is quite a good question because it's really not a Christmas song at all.
Nislopi.
It's a cover.
Is it?
Yeah, of an 80s classic.
No,
it's Michael Andrews featuring Gary Jules. Mad World,
Tears for Fears. Was that Christmas number one?
Yep, 2003. 12. It is available on 12-inch. Now, is that worth more or less?
Less.
It is less. £14 for Mad World.
That's still not bad. It's washed its face, Paul.
That, I believe, was the last ever vinyl Christmas number one that you could get, that you could buy on vinyl. Apart from a slight anomaly, in 2009, can you remember what got to number one?
Was it Rage Against the Machine?
It was Rage Against the Machine. Back in 1993, that was available on 12-inch. So do you think Killing in the Name, white vinyl 12-inch, is worth more or less than Mad World from 2003?
I think they're comparable, and I think it's worth a little bit more.
It is more, £33.
Oh, wow. Okay, they're not comparable.
It's gone up a lot, yeah. That was this week's quiz, which you did terribly on, Tim.
I did okay. Didn't I get about half of them right?
You managed to guess Rage Against the Machine from 2009. That was pretty good.
And I correctly guessed Spice Girls, albeit in the wrong year.
Yes, you guessed Spice Girls three times. Did you get them? Were they all for the wrong year?
Yeah, they were all wrong, I think.
Isn't it weird? There's no... So that means there hasn't been a vinyl record that's been Christmas novel for like 16 years.
Well, at time of recording, do we know... What's Christmas number one this
something
year?
Called is it Lad Baby? I think I've read something about it. I think that's what the he or they or it's something to do with YouTube.
Oh, is it? We don't as podcasters, we've got no track with YouTube. Right, Xmas number one, 2019. It's I Love Sausage Rolls by Lad Baby.
Right.
Which sounds like it means then that the Jarvis Cocker track did not make it. I don't know if you know about that.
I did. So I saw some stuff online. People encourage people to buy a Jarvis Cocker song.
But it didn't work, did it? I mean, the sentiment of the song is true, but it didn't work.
I think that's it. Thank you so much for... Are you looking puzzled?
I thought you were talking to me.
Oh.
you're welcome, Paul.
Can we just say a massive thank you to everyone who's listened, downloaded, reviewed, whatever. I mean, it's been... You know, we literally thought we'd have a couple of dozen people listening to this, but you've been listening in your thousands, so we can't thank you enough. We will be back in 2020. Tim, do you want to say anything?
Same as what you said, really.
Okay.
It's been brilliant. I've had such a great time doing this podcast. Thank you, everyone who's contributed and got in touch. It's just lovely.
The amount of input we get when we ask questions and stuff is just... incredible that they write half the show for us.
Yeah, but that can be the problem, Paul. You have to be careful. We have to be careful never to be one of those shows.
I know, of course, yeah.
But thank you so much. That doesn't mean people should stop communicating
with
us.
No, absolutely not.
They definitely shouldn't.
Yeah, we look forward to bringing you loads more shows in 2020 on We
Buy
Records.